Welcome, good evening. Hello. It's November 13th, 2023, 2032 hours Eastern Standard Time. Ward Green with you again. Gladly to share with you what I can for today and the study we have of the scriptures and the article Born and Raised, chapter 11, paragraph 7 is the paragraph for today from that article. Born and Raised from 2021, the article that I wrote at that time, February 28th being the first day that it was presented in the year 2021. And yesterday we calculated determined using the calculations of others the date for Nisan 1 in 1493 as April 19th, and it was a Friday. So therefore, Nisan 15, which is 2 weeks later, would also be a Friday. And we can repeat this calculation as we read now, little children, over and over and find the same result that for Nisan 15 of BCE 1493, Israel departed on this same day, which we compute as Friday. Now, when Joseph stood before Pharaoh 430 years before this date, he was 30 years old, from Genesis 41 and 46. And he was a slave brought from the jail of the house of the chief of the guard, in brackets. Thus, he had no official citizenship. When Pharaoh appointed Joseph second in command of all of Egypt, Joseph then began to dwell officially in Egypt. At 30 years of age, then, we may be absolutely certain that Joseph was considered a citizen living in Egypt. In chapter 8 of the Crucible article, the graph entitled Slave Prices in Ancient Times, shown here, we see that here in this graph, in the year 1936, Joseph was a slave from Genesis 37:28, and it's from that, it says, in that verse, they sold Joseph to the Ishmaelites for 20 silver pieces, and they brought him into Egypt. 20 silver pieces, which is shown on the graph here too. 20 silver pieces. So it falls into this straight line graph for the year 1936 that Joseph, as a slave, was bought for 20 silver pieces. So that's evidence for the timeline being correct, that there's a graph that presents a linear relationship for the slave price as it increases over time. Now, that graph entitled Slave Prices in Ancient Times, just to repeat from the paragraph, shows a slave of Joseph's day at 20 shekels, and that seems to fit the year BCE 1936 perfectly, right? It fits perfectly according to that graph, which is, if that graph is to follow a continual line, a continual straight line, then that's a perfect fit. The year that Joseph was born, we see, was determined in the article Joseph to be late in BCE 1954. And by the way, the calculation of the day of the week on which Joseph, had he been appointed on Nisan 15 in the year 1923, at the age of 30 years of age, the calculation that shows that Nisan 15 in that year, 1923, was a Friday, was at the end of the article called Joseph and Own, Redemption of the Phoenix, that article, which is the article after Joseph. At the end of that article, there's a day of the week calculation showing that. Now, in the article Joseph, we showed, or we determined, it says here, that Joseph was born in BCE 1954 with his death in BCE 1843 in the reign of Pharaoh Moiris. In the reign of the Pharaoh Moiris, modern day, the name Morris in the modern day, I guess, would be somewhat closely related to that name, Moiris. This is particularly important because the Bar Yosef, which means Joseph's Canal, named after Joseph, was built. I mean, there are people who argue that it was a different Joseph after whom it was named, but there are also accounts that say that it was Joseph of the Bible who built this canal. There are traditional accounts about that, which we mentioned. For example, Zechariah Sitchin has recounted one of those accounts. Now, this is particularly important because of this fact that the Bar Yosef was built to supply Lake Moiris water from the Nile River at just this time. That is the time of the Pharaoh called Moiris, Amenemhat III, Pharaoh Moiris, and Lake Moiris, named after him, were built at the time of Amenemhat III, and the details of Joseph's time in Genesis seem, therefore, a very good fit to the Middle Kingdom period of Egypt, which is, for example, 1936, when the slave price was correct, and the building of the canal named Joseph's Canal at the same time of this Middle Kingdom period in Egypt. Now, the Bar Yosef is not mentioned in the Bible, but it's mentioned in other extra-biblical sources, such as the narrative given from the traditional sources that are quoted by Zechariah Sitchin, for example, about Joseph when he was at the age of 100 years old, being given 100 days. Was it, how many days was it? Not 100 days, 1,000 days? How long was he given? Anyway, it's in one of the articles. I'm not sure which article now it was. Zechariah Sitchin. We need to look it up. We'll talk about it later. I'll look it up again. But no, there's a very, very remarkable story about how Joseph, at the age of 100 years old, built this canal. And he was at that time working to help the Pharaoh. He was working on behalf of the Pharaoh at that, who was the man who was king at that time in Egypt. And that would be, of course, in the year, 100 years after 1954 BCE. 1854 BCE. And so, we know Joseph lived to the age of 110 from the Bible, so it just fits perfectly. The story about Joseph building the canal fits perfectly with how long he lived in the Bible and the fact that he was alive at the time of Amenemhat III in the chronology of Egypt that didn't get invented by us. The chronology of Egypt for the Middle Kingdom was determined by secular historians using certain astronomical things such as the rising of Sothis, for example. And that's one of the most certain accurate time periods. It's believed to be one of the most accurate determinations of any dating for any dynasty of Egypt is the 12th dynasty. It's very accurate because it has certain astronomical relationships associated with it. So for today's proverb, that's the end of our born and raised paragraph for today. But today's proverb, Proverbs 16 and 7, when Jehovah takes pleasure in the ways of a man, he causes even his enemies themselves to be at peace with him. Proverbs 16 and 7. And our reading for today from 1 Samuel, it's 1 Samuel 13. Is that right? Yes. Okay, 1 Samuel 13. Thought I clicked on it. I guess I didn't register. There we go. Saul was a certain number of years old when he began to reign, and for 2 years he reigned over Israel. Now, verse 1 has been much commented upon in the literature, with some people putting Saul as 30 years old when he began to reign and reigning for 42 years. Other people saying anything from 2 years up to 42 years, and including 40 years as one example, and all sorts for his reign length. But also the age at which he began to reign is disputed by some, because in verse 2, Jonathan, his son, is a military leader. So in verse 2, it looks like Saul is older than 30 years old because he has a son old enough. If Saul had a son when he was 15 years old, and his son was 15 years old, then Saul could be 30 years old, but then 15 is young to have a son, and 15 is young to be a military leader. So people have argued that Saul was older than 30 when this chapter occurred. That's why some people believe that this event happened after maybe 10 years or more of Saul having been ruling. And this is thought to be, in verse 1, just an account, the summary of his reigns, which we see his reign length and his age at commencement of his reign, which is analogous to all the other kings of Israel, that they all have these statements given, usually where it says how old they were, at least in many cases, and how long they ruled. So it's thought that this was supposed to be in that formula. But it may not be. It may be that this is a different situation because Saul was the first king, and we saw in 1 Samuel 14:47, there's where it gives the account of his rulership without giving the numbers of years. And Saul proceeded to choose for himself 3,000 men out of Israel, and 2,000 came to be with Saul at Michmash and in the mountainous region of Bethel, and 1,000 proved to be with Jonathan at Gibeah of Benjamin. And the rest of the people he sent away, each one to his tent. Then Jonathan struck down the garrison of the Philistines that was in Geba, and the Philistines got to hear of it. As for Saul, he had the horn blown throughout all the land, saying, "Let the Hebrews hear," and all Israel itself heard tell, "Saul has struck down a garrison of the Philistines, and now Israel has become foul-smelling among the Philistines." So the people were called together to follow Saul to Gilgal, and the Philistines, for their part, collected themselves together to fight against Israel, 30,000 war chariots. Some people have argued that that's too large a number of war chariots. Certainly a large number of chariots. It means a huge force of men. Supposedly, usually all the men wouldn't have war chariots, but you know, usually it would be a small number of war chariots compared to the number of men. But it says 6,000 horsemen and people like the grains of sand that are upon the seashore for multitude. But some people have questioned. We should be aware that there are people who doubt some of these statements in the Bible. That doesn't mean we have to doubt them. And people like grains of sand that are upon the seashore for multitude. So there were a lot of people, it says there, from the Philistines. And they went their way up and began camping in Michmash to the east of Beth-Aven. And the men of Israel themselves saw that they were in sore straits because the people were hard pressed, and the people went hiding themselves in the caves and the hollows and the crags and the vaults and the water pits. Hebrews even crossed the Jordan to the land of Gad and Gilead. But Saul himself was yet in Gilgal, and all the people trembled while following him. And he continued waiting for 7 days to the appointed time that Samuel had said. And Samuel did not come to Gilgal, and the people were scattering from him. Finally, Saul said, "Bring near to me the burnt sacrifice and the communion sacrifices." With that, he went offering up the burnt sacrifice. And it came about, he was supposed to wait for Samuel, and it came about that as soon as he had finished offering up the burnt sacrifice, why, there was Samuel coming in. So Saul went out to meet him and bless him. Then Samuel said, "What is it you have done?" To this Saul said, "I saw that the people had been dispersed from me, and you did not come within the appointed days. And the Philistines were being collected together at Michmash. So I said to myself, 'Now the Philistines will come down against me at Gilgal, and the face of Jehovah I have not softened.' So I compelled myself and went offering up the burnt sacrifice." At this, Samuel said to Saul, "You have acted foolishly. You have not kept the commandment of Jehovah your God that he commanded you, because if you had, Jehovah would have made your kingdom firm over Israel to time indefinite, and now your kingdom will not last. Jehovah will certainly find for himself a man agreeable to his heart, and Jehovah will commission him as a leader over his people, because you did not keep what Jehovah has commanded you, what Jehovah commanded you." Then Samuel rose and went his way up from Gilgal to Gibeah of Benjamin. And Saul proceeded to take the count of the people, those yet found with him, about 600 men who were remaining of the men who had been with him. And Saul and Jonathan his son and the people yet found with them were dwelling in Geba of Benjamin. As for the Philistines, they had encamped in Michmash, and the force of pillagers would sally forth from the camp of the Philistines in three bands. The one band would turn to the road to Ophrah, to the land of Shual, and the other band would turn to the road of Beth-horon, and the third band would turn to the road to the boundary that looks toward the valley of Zeboiim, toward the wilderness. Now, there was not a blacksmith, to be found in all the land of Israel, because the Philistines had said that the Hebrews may not make a sword or a spear, and all the Israelites would go down to the Philistines to get each one his plowshare or his mattock or his axe or his sickle sharpened. And the price for sharpening proved to be a pim, 2/3 of a shekel, which is like 2/3 of a day's wage, for the plowshares. I'm not even sure what a day's wage was in the time of David, but at some point in history a shekel would have been a day's wage. I'm thinking even in the time of Jesus it might have been a day's wage. So 2/3 of a shekel is a lot of money. "For the plowshares and for the mattocks and for the three-toothed instruments and for the axes and for fixing fast the ox goad. And it happened on the day of battle that not a sword or a spear was found in the hand of any of all the people that were with Saul and Jonathan. Not a sword or spear, but there could be found one belonging to Saul and to Jonathan his son." So they didn't have many weapons. That's another reason why many commentators think this happened many years after the beginning of Saul's reign, because at the beginning of Saul's reign, Saul mustered a much bigger army in chapter 11 of this book, 1 Samuel, as we read. And that army was successful, with no mention of the lack of weapons. So the fact that there's no weapons here, or very few weapons, only two, one with Saul and one with his son, to some commentators means that this happened maybe 10 or 15 years even after the beginning of Saul's reign, maybe later, but sometime later in Saul's reign, after the Philistines had succeeded in disarming Israel by removing the blacksmiths from the land and so on. Now, an outpost of the Philistines would sally forth to the ravine pass of Michmash. So we still see they're talking about this event, this battle that was located at Michmash. And what happens in next day's study, we're going to see some interesting things possibly in the next few chapters. There's still, Saul is still dwelling in Gibeah, or Geba, as some accounts give its name, the town of Gibeah. And that's 1 Samuel 14, where we're going to be reading hopefully tomorrow. Let's go, before we use up too much of our precious time today, let's begin our reading of Jeremiah. And the sin of Judah is written down with an iron stylus. With a diamond point, it is engraved on the tablet of their heart. Jeremiah writing, as Jehovah was revealing it to him, and on the horns of their altars, when their sons remember their altars and their sacred poles beside a luxuriant tree upon the high hills, on the mountains in the field. Your resources, all your treasures, I shall give for mere plunder, your high places because of sin throughout all your territories. And you let loose, even of your own accord, from your hereditary possession that I had given you. I also will make you serve your enemies in the land that you have not known, for as a fire you people have been ignited in my anger. To time indefinite it will keep kindled. This is what Jehovah has said. Cursed is the able-bodied man who puts his trust in earthling man and actually makes flesh his arm, and whose heart turns away from Jehovah himself. And he will certainly become like a solitary tree in the desert plain, and will not see when good comes, but he must reside in parched places in the wilderness, in a salt country that is not inhabited. Blessed is the able-bodied man who puts his trust in Jehovah, and whose confidence Jehovah has become. And he will certainly become like a tree planted by the waters that sends out its roots right by the watercourse. And he will not see when heat comes, but his foliage will actually prove to be luxuriant. And in the year of drought, he will not become anxious, nor will he leave off from producing fruit. The heart is more treacherous than anything else and is desperate. Who can know it? I, Jehovah, am searching the heart, examining the kidneys, even to give to each one according to his ways, according to the fruitage of his dealings. As the partridge that is gathered together, what it has not laid, is the one making riches, but not with justice. At the half of his days he will leave them, and in his finale he will prove to be senseless. There's the glorious throne on high from the start. It is the place of our sanctuary. O Jehovah, the hope of Israel, all those who are leaving you will be put to shame. Those apostatizing from me will be written down even in the earth. I don't think I ever noticed the spelling of that word, apostatizing, before. Apostatizing. Apostasy. Is it apostasy, apostatize, or apostatize? Or maybe both. Let's see. Let's look it up. Where's the dictionary? Where's our dictionary? Notes. There it is. It's like apostatize. Apostasize? No, apostatize. Apostatize. Right. I don't know if I ever knew that word correctly. Those apostatizing from me, Jehovah said, will be written down even in the earth. Or Jeremiah wrote this. And so maybe it's those apostatizing from him or from Jehovah, but either one or maybe both, because they have left the source of living water, Jehovah. Heal me, O Jehovah, and I shall be healed. Save me, and I will be saved, for you are my praise. look, there are those saying to me, where is the word of Jehovah? Let it come in, please. But as for me, I did not hasten from being a shepherd following you, and for the desperate day I did not show any craving. You yourself have known the expression of my lips. In front of your face, it has occurred. Do not become something terrifying to me. You are my refuge in the day of calamity. Let my persecutors be put to shame, but let me personally be put to no shame. Let them be the ones to be struck with terror, but let me personally not be struck with terror. Bring upon them the day of calamity and break them even with twice as much breakdown. This is what Jehovah has said to me. Go, and you must stand in the gate of the sons of the people by which the kings of Judah enter in and by which they go out, and in all the gates of Jerusalem. And you must say to them, hear the word of Jehovah, you kings of Judah, and all Judah, and all you inhabitants of Jerusalem who are entering in by these gates. This is what Jehovah has said. Watch out for your souls, and do not carry on the Sabbath day any load that you must bring in through the gates of Jerusalem. And you must bring no load out of your homes on the Sabbath day, and no work at all must you do. And you must sanctify the Sabbath day, just as I commanded your forefathers. But they did not listen or incline their ear, and they proceeded to harden their neck in order not to hear and in order to receive no discipline. And it must occur that if you strictly obey me, is the utterance of Jehovah, to bring in no load through the gates of this city on the Sabbath day and to sanctify the Sabbath day by not doing on it any work, there will also certainly enter in by the gates of this city kings with princes sitting on the throne of David, riding in the chariot and upon horses, they and their princes, the men of Judah and the inhabitants of Jerusalem. And this city will certainly be inhabited to time indefinite. And people will actually come from the cities of Judah and from round about Jerusalem and from the land of Benjamin and from the lowland and from the mountainous region and from the Negev, bringing whole burnt offering and sacrifice and grain offering and frankincense and bringing thanksgiving sacrifice into the house of Jehovah. But if you will not obey me by sanctifying the Sabbath day and not carrying a load, but there's a coming in with it through the gates of Jerusalem on the Sabbath day, I will also set a fire ablaze in her gates, and it will certainly devour the dwelling towers of Jerusalem and will not be extinguished. And that's the end of Jeremiah 17. So they were to observe the Sabbath, which they were not evidently currently doing sufficiently. What is our time? We have very little time, but we do have one more reading. James chapter 4, from what source are there wars, and from what source are there fights among you? Are they not from this source, namely from your cravings? James just talked about peace in chapter 3. The fruit of righteousness, verse 18, has its seed sown under peaceful conditions for those who are making peace in chapter 3, verse 18. And 4, chapter 4, verse 1, from what source are there wars, and from what source are there fights among you? Are they not from this source, namely from your cravings for sensual pleasure that carry on a conflict in your members? You desire, and yet you do not have. You go on murdering and coveting, and yet you are not able to obtain. You go on fighting and waging war. You do not have because of your not asking. You do ask, and yet you do not receive because you are asking for a wrong purpose, that you may expend it upon your cravings for sensual pleasure. Adulteresses, do you not know that the friendship with the world is enmity with God? Whoever therefore wants to be a friend of the world is constituting himself an enemy of God. Or does it seem to you that the scripture says to no purpose, it is with a tendency to envy that the spirit which has taken up residence within us keeps longing? However, the undeserved kindness which he gives is greater. Hence it says, God opposes the haughty ones, but he gives undeserved kindness to the humble ones. Subject yourselves, therefore, to God. But oppose the devil, and he will flee from you. Draw close to God, and he will draw close to you. Cleanse your hands, you sinners, and purify your hearts, you indecisive ones. Give way to misery, and mourn and weep. Let your laughter be turned into mourning, and your joy into dejection. Humble yourselves in the eyes of Jehovah, and he will exalt you. Quit speaking against one another, brothers. He who speaks against a brother or judges his brother speaks against law and judges law. Now, if you judge law, you are not a doer of law, but a judge. One there is that is lawgiver and judge, he who is able to save and to destroy. But you, who are you to be judging your neighbor? Come now, you who say, today or tomorrow we will journey to this city and will spend a year there, and we will engage in business and make profits, whereas you do not know what your life will be tomorrow, for you are a mist, appearing for a little while and then disappearing. Instead, you ought to say, if Jehovah wills, we shall live and also do this or that. But now you take pride in yourself, assuming brags. All such taking of pride is wicked. Therefore, if one knows how to do what is right and yet does not do it, it is a sin for him. This is so significant here. Today or tomorrow, you who say today or tomorrow we will journey to this city and will spend a year there and we will engage in business and make profits, whereas you do not know what your life will be tomorrow, for you are a mist appearing for a little while and then disappearing. Instead, you ought to say, if Jehovah wills, we shall live and also do this or that. But now you take pride in yourself, assuming brags. All such taking of pride is wicked. Therefore, if one knows how to do what is right and yet does not do it, it is a sin for him. That's the end of our study for today. Our video is pretty well concluded, too. Little children, thank you for joining us. I hope you will join us again if you wish. And have a wonderful rest of your day. This is November 13th. We still have a minute or so. It's November 13th, 2023. I've got about a minute and a little bit more to discuss this, what we've been reading. So in the olden days of Jeremiah, they were still under the Mosaic law and they were supposed to observe the Sabbath. That was important. One of the Ten Commandments, actually, was to observe the Sabbath day. So that was the fourth commandment of the Ten Commandments. That was important, and they were told if they didn't observe the Sabbath that Jehovah was going to basically annihilate them, which in fact he did in the days of King Zedekiah while Jeremiah was still prophesying. So it is now a few seconds left, but in the book of James here, the brother of the Lord Jesus, James gives some very interesting, useful counsel here about judging others too. He says, only Jehovah, one there is that is lawgiver and judge, that'll be Jehovah. He's the judge ultimately, except over those things that he appoints Jesus, of course, to be judge. This is Ward Green. I love you. The time is 21:05 Eastern Standard Time, November 13th, 2023. In my behalf, this is Crow. And this is Cassie. And they together are saying, bye for now.